What's happened with Israel, the news with what they've just gone through, I'm guessing that is what the title here is all about. Brother Ken has a title, Hezbollah, Lebanon, Israel, and the Palestinians, Psalms 83. Somebody's heard this before. Brother Ken.
Thank you, Brother Tim. You know, the reason I'm concerned about time is, you know, some brethren have the ability to make a long story short. I have the ability to make a short story long. That's my continual problem. And I guess sort of indicative of the age I'm reaching, but you know, when I'm at a convention, I just look out on the audience and there's so many memories. And I just love to walk down memory lane. I'll just pick out a couple of Shirley's right here in the front row. I remember the first general convention at Epworth Forest in 1939. I was a 13-year-old rascal. And there was a boat ride around the lake that they arranged to have after the convention one evening. And I was on the bottom deck and enclosed, and all the older brethren were singing hymns, and I was wondering, where are all the younger brethren at? So I went up on the top deck in the moonlight, and you can imagine what a 13-year-old rascal would do at a point like that. And I had a lot of fun with the young couples. Then I see Albert and Anastasia over there. And I go back to 1940 at the second general convention. And it was at Chautauqua, and my folks had a large rented-a large cottage. I was 14 years old. And it was at that time that the young people came out of the Polish movement into the English classes. And we had, I guess, about 30 at our cottage, most of them the young Polish people. And Albert and Anna were just recently married. And they were there. And, you know, the big thing at that time, the war just started in Europe with Hitler and the Nazis, and Hitler was threatening to conquer Europe. And the brethren would say, well, is he going to do it? Is he going to be able to conquer all of Europe? Young Albert, not even a deacon yet, he says, no. He says, there's only four universal empires to be followed by the fifth universal empire, Christ. He says, Hitler will never conquer the old Roman Empire. He was right. Then I look back and see Irene. Well, I think of Irene and the many years, and I just cry. She'd been very dear to Virginia and I. You have a handout on about the third or fourth page of the handout. You have a map that looks like this for identification. Just write on it map one. We'll refer to it very briefly. And then you have a separate map like this. Just write on it map two. Okay, on the last page of the handout, you have a chart, and I guess some brethren take themselves too seriously. I have, in a chronological sequence, the events that would happen in Israel from 1967 war on to the mediatorial reign. You might find it interesting in your personal studies at home. We're not going to deal with it at all, but it's just for your own research work, and I'd appreciate any input that you might have on it. all right, Israel, Hezbollah, Lebanon, and the Palestinians fulfilling prophecy, and we're going to deal, at first at least, with the Psalms 83. We'll see how far we get after that. As you know, I'm very supportive of Israel's place in God's plan, and the right of Israel to fight for all the land that God has promised them. But I'm also a conscientious objector. Since the 1950s, I've served on all the conscientious objectors in the committees in the Bible Student Movement, helping our young brethren. I hate war. I hate bloodshed. And in my heart, I cry for every Palestinian child that's killed as much as I cry for the Israeli children that are killed. I can't wait till the kingdom is fully set up. Having said that, you know, Hezbollah has hit the headlines. I don't know if you remember back to ...1983... when the United States had over 200... I guess it was 240 U.S. soldiers, Marines stationed for peacekeeping in Lebanon. One bomb. They were all killed. Who did it? Hezbollah. And since then, Hezbollah has been flexing their muscles with impunity, so much so that the UN finally passed a resolution in resolution 1559 requiring the disbanding and disarming of Hezbollah. But you know the old story they tell about the mice that had a meeting because the cat that was always going after them. And they decided that they had a strategy. The strategy was, well, they had this big bell with a string around it, and put the bell over the neck of the cat, and when he comes, you can hear him coming. But they had one problem. Which one of them was going to put the bell on the cat? The UN passed a resolution that Hezbollah has to be disbanded and disarmed. But who was going to do it? Not the Lebanese army. Not the UN peacekeeping forces. So, in June of this year, Hezbollah initiated a terrorist raid into Israel, killing members of an Israeli patrol, taking two captives alive. Well, there's nothing new about this. It happened before. But what was new, Israel decided to respond quite firmly this time. They've overlooked it for a number of times. So they demanded the return of the kidnapped prisoners and the withdrawal of Hezbollah from southern Lebanon. Or else. Hezbollah refused. Israel, tired of waiting for the enforcement of UN Resolution 1559, requiring the disbanding of Hezbollah, Israel took the role of the enforcer and invaded Lebanon. And another Israeli-Arab war was in progress, began. Now, we're not going to follow the handout, no word for word, a paragraph for paragraph, so don't necessarily follow the handout as we're going along in this talk. Now we come to Psalms 83. And we're going to read Psalms 83, but before that, we just might make an observation. No, there are, among the brethren, there are several interpretations of Psalms 83 floating around. Therefore, what I say is offered in the spirit of dialogue. And, you know, I think sometimes we elders take ourselves too seriously, especially when we're dealing with prophecy. So whenever I give a prophetic talk, I always say, if it doesn't happen that way, it's going to be better. So, of course, I have an interpretation of Psalms 83, and if it doesn't happen that way, the Lord's going to have it work out better. Now, I don't find anything in Psalms 83 that indicates that it will be connected with Gog's invasion of Ezekiel 38 and 39, although some brethren do. So first of all, we're going to read Psalms 83. And you're going to find as we're reading this that it's actually a prayer. It's a prayer that Israel is rendering, offering up to God. And although Psalms 83 shows that there's a conflict between two parties, Arabs and Israel, it doesn't prophesy what the outcome of this conflict will be. We know what Israel prays for in this prayer, but it doesn't say it's going to happen that way, but we assume from other scriptures that it does. Okay, verse 1. Keep not thou silent, O God, hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God, for lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have filled up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people, consulted against thy hidden ones, and actually its protected ones. They are under the protection of Jehovah. They have said, come, and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederated against thee. How are they confederated against God? Because they're confederated against his people. They want to destroy the nation of Israel. And then verses 6 and 7 describe who the Arabs are. The tabernacles of Edom and Ishmaelites of Moab and the Hagarenes, Gebel and Ammon and Amalek, the Philistines, the inhabitants of Tyre, Asher, and many translations say Assyria, and Asher was the capital of ancient Assyria, also is joined with them. They have hoped with the children of Lot, and actually in the Hebrew it's they are the strong arm of the children of Lot, who were Ammon and Moab. Then here's the prayer, passing down to verse 13, the prayer that Israel is rendering. O God, make them, that is, these Arab nations, like a willow, as a stubble before the wind, as the fire that burneth a wood, and as a flame setteth the mountains on fire. So that is the prayer that is offered up symbolically that Israel, and many do, have words of prayer very similar in Israel, very similar to this actual wordology. Now, verse 6 mentions some of the nations that would be arrayed against Israel. And Bible scholars and Bible historians agree that ancient Israel was never confronted by such an elaborate alliance of nations, namely the Ishmaelites, Edom, Ammon, Amalekite, Hagarene, Gebel, and the Philistines. Therefore, we feel that this prophecy must have an end-time fulfillment. Now, these Old Testament names, Edom, Moab, Ammon, are actually ancient names of ancient territories that in modern times comprise the nation of Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, and Syria. Now, we're going to refer to map one briefly. That's this map that might be a couple pages back. And the first listing of these Arabs that would be arrayed against Israel is Edom, Moab, and Ammon. And on this map, you recognize the state of Israel, the West Bank, the boundary line between Israel and the nation of Jordan that goes this way. Now, in the nation of Jordan, even modern Jordan, the capital is named Ammon. And this was the territory of Ammon in ancient times. Moab was to the south, and Edom was to the south of that. So that is basically referring to the current state Edom, Moab, and Ammon is referring to the current nation of Jordan. Now, Gebel is Lebanon. We won't take time to read Joshua 13, verses 5 and 6, but Joshua 13, 1 begins with Joshua being old of age. His warring days are over, and there's much territory that he hasn't taken yet. And the Lord lists that territory in verses 5 and 6 that hasn't been taken yet by under Joshua's leadership. And prominent in that listing in verses 5 and 6 is Lebanon, which is called Gebel. And it goes on to show that they will occupy Lebanon up to Hamath, which is actually the almost the northern tip border of Lebanon that is much further north than what you've been hearing in the news in the war, Tyre, Beirut, and Sidon. Hamath is much further north, and the Lord says in Joshua 13, they're going to get Lebanon all the way that far north. Now, Hagarenes are mentioned in this text, and some translations say Hagarites. And these two words are used interchangeably. So some brethren say, that's Egypt. Why? Because Abraham's wife that he had, Ishmael, was Hagar. But I submit it's not Egypt. Even though Hagar was called, or his wife was called Hagar, and she was an Egyptian, I submit the Hagarenes and or Hagarites do not refer to Egypt, but rather to Iraq and the Iraqis. And as a basis for this, we'll turn to Joshua, or no, 1 Chronicles, the 5th chapter. Now, in the first verse of chapter 5 of 1 Chronicles, you see that it's dealing with Reuben and his inheritance in the land. And then by the time you get down to verses 8 and 9, you get to the descendants of Reuben. And they part of Reuben's inheritance, the tribe of Reuben, was on the east side of Jordan, the land of Gilead, on this map. Now, beginning with verse 9 in 1 Chronicles 5, it says, speaking of his descendants, "And eastward he inhabited unto the entering in of the wilderness from the river Euphrates." He entered in of the wilderness from the river Euphrates because of cattle were multiplied in the land of Gilead. So now you have, at the time of this writing, that Reuben's descendants, who their inheritance was Gilead, they were, now we're on map 2. Here's Gilead, here's Israel, here's Jordan, here's Iraq. And they had expanded, and their cattle are grazing all the way eastward to the wilderness of the river Euphrates. Well, where's the river Euphrates? Beyond Jordan, into Iraq, and almost three-quarters through into Iraq. You see it right up here, that light weaving river there at the top of your right side of the map. That's the Euphrates River, and the descendants of Reuben are grazing all the way from Gilead eastward into the wilderness of the river Euphrates. And then in verse 10, they have a war with the Hagarenes, or the Hagarites. It varies according to your translation. who occupied this territory that was modern-day Iraq, but this was their territory east of what is now Jordan in the wilderness of Iraq. So we submit that the Hagarenes referred to the Iraqis and not the Egyptians. Well, some of you might say, so what? So I'll agree with you, so what? But just identifying who they were. Okay, now the Ishmaelites are the original Arabs. And they settled in what is today Saudi Arabia, and actually Ishmael's eldest son is identified with Syria. Now, Lebanon, Gebel, and Tyre, who are mentioned in Psalms 83, actually play a prominent role. Now, Hezbollah was headquartered in Tyre, which has been heavily attacked by Israel in this past war, because Tyre was the headquarters for Hezbollah. Now, back in the 1970s, just to show you the history of Lebanon and Tyre in this, and as I say, I feel that Psalms 83 is an ongoing war between the Arabs and Israel until it's culminated in a final war between the Arabs and Israel, in which Israel will gain a decisive victory. So back in the 1970s, the PLO had 6,000 Palestinians, terrorists, in southern Lebanon. And they're creating havoc in Galilee, northern Israel, with terrorist raids. At one point, they killed 37 children, I believe, in an Israeli school in just one raid. So, finally, on June 6, 1982, Sharon led Operation Peace of Galilee, and the Israeli army invaded Lebanon. They pushed the PLO back to their camps, the Palestinians in Tyre. Arafat and his top echelon were in Tyre, and they were ready to capture Arafat and his top echelon of leaders and wipe them out. And to their utter amazement, the United States steps in and said, don't touch Arafat. Don't touch the leaders of the PLO. We will give them safe passage to Tunis. And the poor Israelis just stood there in shock and watched the U.S. Marines escort Arafat and his crowd on ships and gave him safe passage to Tunis. You know the old saying? He that fights and runs lives to fight another day. And unfortunately, Arafat lived to fight another day. Meanwhile, the U.S. Marines were stationed in Beirut to keep the peace. That's when Hezbollah, a new Shiite terrorist group, murdered the U.S. Marines in one night, over 240. Now, this caught the eye of Iran. Iran was a theological center for Shiite Muslims. And now, through Syria, Iran bankrolled and provided the military might for Hezbollah. And they got their military equipment from Russia. At that time, the Israeli army retreated to southern Lebanon, and they maintained a buffer zone in southern Lebanon up to the river, Latini. But then Hezbollah kept raiding that buffer zone. Then Jewish soldiers were killed. Well, I don't know if you heard of the four mothers who lost their sons in these Hezbollah raids, but they started the Four Mothers in Black. And they put on such a campaign in Israel. Our poor soldiers, what are we doing in Lebanon? Our poor soldiers are being killed. Well, their sons were killed. So they won over the sympathy of the Israeli public. The Israeli public put pressure on the Israeli government And finally, Barack, in 2000, the Labor Prime Minister withdrew all Israeli troops from Lebanon, naively thinking that Hezbollah would be satisfied, but it was not. Hezbollah rockets continued to hit Israel. The UN passed Resolution 1559, but there was nobody to enforce it. Now, Ariel Sharon did the same foolish thing that Barak did in southern Lebanon. He withdrew all of the Jewish settlers from Gaza. And did that solve the problem of no more violence? No. Ever since that time, the PLO and Hamas have been sending rockets all over southern Israel that was never hit by rockets before. All right, Israel invaded in June. What happened? Plain and simple, Israel lost the war. The shame of Israel's history. Israel could have and should have won this war, but instead its army suffered heavy losses. Never before was the Israeli civilian population bombed and devastated. 1,000 Israelis were displaced from their homes. Over 500 living almost 24 hours a day in bomb shelters. Never before has this happened to Israel. They failed to knock Hezbollah out, as Olmert boasted they would. Why did the Lord prevent Israel from having a decisive victory as they had in the past in all their wars? Perhaps the Lord was teaching Israel that they are not to give up land that the Lord has given to them. And Lebanon was rightly theirs, even though they were just occupying the southern part of Lebanon. Lebanon, all the way up to Hamat, was promised to them by God. But because they gave up this land for peace, they had no peace, and they lost the war. Now, just deal briefly how they could have won the war. You know, for 3 years before the June invasion, the top strategist of the Israeli army knew the problem of Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. And they knew the day was coming when they're going to have to attack southern Lebanon and Hezbollah. And they had a strategy worked out that they knew they could win that war in 10 to 15 days. The first part of that strategy was a surprise air raid on Psalms 83, Lebanon, a surprise air raid on Tyre, where the headquarters of Hezbollah was. The rest of their headquarters was in Beirut. They would bomb them first, and then the next day they would saturate bombing of southern Lebanon where suspected Hezbollah sites were, and then the third day, they would drop paratroopers behind the Hezbollah lines, as well as invade from the south, and Israeli forces coming from the north-south and the south-north and just surrounding Hezbollah. That was the plan that would have worked. But Olmert did not have the nerve or the Zionist spirit to approve it, and he took a lesser course. A word about Olmert. Now, I've had 4 personal meetings with Olmert, and he promised me, he says, "We will never give up an inch of territory to the Arabs." What did he do? all of Gaza, southern Lebanon. He did not have the Zionist backbone for his convictions. And he turned out to be nothing but an opportunist. And that's how he got to be prime minister, because he was an opportunist. Now we feel that there will be an ongoing Israeli-Arab conflict until its finale, in which Israel will win decisively. And some brethren feel that say, oh, well, so what, you know, there's going to soon be another war and Israel invade Lebanon. Well, it won't be that soon, because there's problems. You now have going to have a large UN peacekeeping force, and as long as that large UN peacekeeping force is there, Israel cannot invade. Not that they couldn't win, but now this would be an international crisis, and they would get serious UN economics sanctions that could be very difficult. And you know who's going to compose this? The majority is going to compose this UN security force, peacekeeping force. Muslims from Indonesia, Muslims from Turkey. You know that brave France out there? I hope there aren't any French brethren here. That brave France out there? Their big fuss about, you know, we're going to have this peacekeeping force to enforce the peace. They're sending 300 men. 300 men. Very brave. Anyway. But there will be a future Israel-Arab war, and we're going to give some scriptures on it. And we feel that Israel will receive a decisive victory in this future war. Our first scripture is Isaiah 11:14. You go back to verse 11, and it speaks about the Lord second time bringing his people back into the land of Israel. And verse 14, after they're settled there, it speaks of a war. And it says, but they, Israel, shall fly upon the shoulders of the Philistines towards the west. And the Palestinians claim to be the Philistines. And the west is Gaza. And that's where the Palestinians are concentrated very heavily. They fly upon the shoulders of the Philistines toward the west. They shall spoil them of the east together. They shall lay their hand on Edom and Moab. Okay, let's get to our map again. The Gaza Strip is right down here. That's to the west. And then to the east, they have a war with Moab and Ammon, which is in Jordan proper, and it says that Moab and Ammon will obey them. So this is a decisive war if they there obey them. So if they give up any of the West Bank now, in order to take Moab and Ammon, they'll have to take back any of the West Bank that they give up. All right, our next scripture is Zephaniah, the second chapter. We'll just paraphrase it. You have it here in the notes. You can read the refer to it any time. And we know the prophetic setting and the time setting of Zephaniah, the second chapter, because verse 2 says, seek meekness, seek righteousness, and it may be that ye will be hid in what? The day of God's wrath. So the time setting of Zephaniah 2 is the time of trouble that we're living in. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. In verses 3 through 7, describes a war that Israel will have with the inhabitants of the Gaza. And then in verses 8 through 10, it describes a war that Israel will have with Moab and Ammon. And they will thoroughly defeat Moab and Ammon in these verses. And in Obadiah, without taking time to read it, you know, Obadiah from about 19 onward, although Obadiah before that deals with spiritual Israel, Obadiah from 19 onward deals with natural Israel, and it shows that they will, at that point, occupy Lebanon up to Zarephath in that future war. So Israel will gain a decisive victory over the Arab nations before the invasion of Gog of Magog. Okay, now we want to deal with Psalms 83 a little more. In verse 8, it says that Assyria also is joined with them. They have helped the children of Lot, and the children of Lot are Ammon and Moab. Now, Assyria could refer to Iraq. And some brethren feel it does. Because ancient Assyria is what? Modern-day Iraq. You say, come on, Brother Ken, isn't that logical? Well, let's follow a line of reasoning. There are a number of scriptures that show that Assyria, in end-time prophecy in connection with Israel, refers to Russia and her allies. Our first scripture is Micah, the fifth chapter. And as I sound, you know, a little overpowering on some of these things, I'm very, very convicted. Remember, my bottom line is, if it's not that way, it's going to be better. So I always make that allowance. Okay, Micah, the fifth chapter. Verse 4, and Brother Megason has a beautiful comment on this, if you have his notes. And he shall stand, and actually for feed, look in your margin and true, he shall stand and rule in the strength of the Lord and the majesty of the name of the Lord his God, and they shall abide, and they shall abide, for now shall he be great unto the ends of the earth. And this is, in the Hebrew, this is the manner by which peace shall come. When the Assyrian shall come in our land, and when he shall tread in our palaces, then shall we raise up against him 7 shepherds and 8 principal men. And actually the word principal in the Hebrew is princes of men. And as Brother Megason observes, this is after the 7 shepherds, the church is completed, they are glorified, and the ancient worthies are on the scene, or he shall raise up the ancient worthies. And verse 6, and they shall lay waste the land of Assyria with the sword, and the land of Nimrod, and the entrance thereof. All right, what war does Israel have after the church is completed? The invasion of Gog, by Gog, what war is there after the church is completed in Israel? And that is the invasion of Gog. So we submit that here, Assyria is referring to Gog's invasion and the Lord's defeat of Assyria, and that defeat sweeping back to their land. And the land of Nimrod symbolically refers to Christendom, so we feel that Assyria is symbolic in these end-time prophecies of Russia, and Nimrod, of course, of Christendom. Now, to buttress this point, let's turn to Zechariah 10. I don't have my verses readily here. Okay, Zechariah 10:10. I'm sorry about that. And I will bring them again out of the land of Egypt and gather them out of Syria, and I will bring them into the land of Gilead and Lebanon. And place shall not be found for them. Now, this is a referral to the gathering of Jews and their return to the land at the in the gospel age during the current time. And it says that they come from Egypt and Assyria, and they fill the land of Gilead. And remember, the land of Gilead was on the east side of the river, which they will take in a future war. And there are 200 Jews in Egypt. There are 400 Jews in literal Syria, Iraq. So this is referring to a symbolic Egypt, Christendom, and a symbolic Assyria, which we feel is symbolic of Russia. And part of this exodus has already taken place, over a million. And there are yet 2 million to 3 million Jews left in Russia, and a typical Assyria, from which the people will be gathered. So we feel that Russia or Assyria, that is the strong arm of Israel, or rather of the Arabs in the Psalms 83 battle, is actually Russia. Now, we did want to get to when all Israel's lovers will forsake her. And we feel that this will take place actually during the invasion of Gog, invasion of Israel by Gog. Most brethren take the scripture in Jeremiah 33:14-15 and apply it to a period before the invasion of Gog. But in Ezekiel 39:26, it speaks of the Lord punishing Israel in that war because of some great sin that she commits during the invasion of Gog. And Ezekiel 38, when you think of Israel, some great sin she commits when she's dwelling at peace. When you think of Israel dwelling at peace, you think of Ezekiel 38, verses 11 through 13, where Israel is dwelling in unwalled villages. We feel that that has a symbolic significance. We feel it has a literal significance. And we feel the literal significance will be that Israel, after the future war in which she gains the East Bank as well as Gaza back, that the Western powers, especially the United States, her lovers of Jeremiah 30, will guarantee that Israel will have secure boundaries if they disarm. And we feel they will disarm at that time and trust their salvation, their future security to their lovers, United States and the UN, who will have, we feel, forces down there, their own forces, to maintain peace in the Middle East. And it's at that time that Gog will invade Israel, and her lovers, the United States, we feel that are referred to in Ezekiel 38:11-13, will say, why should we protect Israel? We'll take the spoil ourselves. And, of course, the Lord will defeat both two sets of nations, the invading forces of Gog and the peacekeeping forces, Israel's lovers, that are down there. And then Israel, having learned that final lesson that they have to trust in the Lord, the kingdom will be established. And, you know, any good story has a happy ending. And the best story in the history of mankind is God's plan for mankind. And the happy ending is that peace will come through Israel and prosperity to the whole world of mankind. As Israel, as God, with the ancient worthy, as God's representatives on earth, will dispense the blessing of mankind to all. God bless you all.